Hariwa, all glories to your sound devotees, all glories to Sri Guru and Sri Gauranga. Namo Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasthaya Padaya Shrimati Bhakti Vedanta Swami Tanamane Namaste Sarasvatam Deve Gauravani Pracharane Nirvishesha Shunivadi Pasipadyade Satarna Oma Gyana Tivanandasya Gharanjana Salakaya Chaksur Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurve Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manovishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadam Aiham Tadati Swa Padantikam Pandeham Shikaro Shri Uta Pada Kamalam Shri Gurum Vaishnavam Scha Shri Rupam Sagridatam Sahagana Raganatam Vitam Tam Sajivam Sarvaitam Sabadutam Parijana Saitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padan Sahagana Lalita Shri Visakam Svitam Scha Hey Krishna Karna Sindho Dinabandho Jagatpate Kopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostute Tapta Kanchana Gorangi Radhe Brindavaneshwari Prishubhanu Sutadevi Pranamami Hari Priye Vanchakalpa Trivyascha Kripa Sindhu Vyevacha Patidanam Bhavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Shri Krishna Chaitanya Pranitinanda Shedvaiti Gadadhar Shivasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare 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 Rama, Rama Rama Rama, Hare Hare Jaya Jaya Shri Chaitanya Jaya Nityananda Jaya Dvaita Chandra Jaya Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Jaya Jaya Shri Chaitanya Jaya Nityananda Jaya Dvaita Chandra Jaya Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Jaya Jaya Shri Chaitanya Jaya Nityananda Jaya Dvaita Chandra Jaya Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Shri Chaitanya Charitamrita, Madhya Lila, Chapter 20. The Lord instructs Sanatana Goswami, text number 218. Within the universe, the Lord is situated in different spiritual manifestations. These are situated on 7 islands and 9 sections. Thus, their pastimes are going on. Purport, the 7 islands are mentioned in the Siddhanta Shiromani. The 7 islands, dvipas, are known as Jambu, Shaka, Shamali, Kusha, Kruncha, Gomeda, or Plaksha, and Pushkara. The planets are called dvipas. Outer space is like an ocean of air. Just as there are islands in the watery ocean, these planets in the ocean of space are called dvipas, or islands in the outer space. There are 9 khandas known as Bharat, Kinara, Hari, Kuru, Hiranmaya, Ramyaka, Ilavrita, Bhadrashva, and Ketumala. These are different parts of Jambudvip. The valley between the two mountains is called a khanda or varsha. Text 219. The Lord is situated in all the universes in different forms just to please his devotees. Thus the Lord destroys irreligious principles and establishes religious principles. Purport. In the material world, the Lord is situated in different archamurtis, deities, in the temples just to increase the material activities of the decrease material activities of the conditioned soul and increase his spiritual activities. Particularly in India, there are many temples throughout the country. Devotees may take advantage of them and go to see the Lord at Jagannath Puri, Vrindavan, Prayag, Mathura, Hardwar, and Vishnu Kanchi. When the devotees travel to these places and see the Lord, they become very happy in devotional service. Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Pristaya Bhutaya Srimate Bhakti Vedanta Swami Tanamane Namaste Sarasvatam Deve Gauravani Pracharane Nirvishesha Srinivadi Paskya Dhyade Siddharane. It is, so this, I stopped so far at 219, whoever, next time. And he said in the scriptures that Kritate Dayato Vishnu, that in the age of Krita Yuga or Sati Yuga, people were engaged in meditation. And in the age of Treta Yuga, Tretayam Yajiko Mukai, in Treta Yuga people perform sacrifices. And Dwarpayam Paricharyayam, in the age of Dwarka, they used to perform temple worship. Kalotadari Kirtanat. And in Kali Yuga, what's recommended is the chanting of the holy names. The whole idea is somehow or another to become conscious of Krishna. How to become conscious of Krishna may be emphasized differently in different ages. The whole idea is somehow or another, as Prabhupada writes in the Krishna book, Krishna consciousness is the art of focusing one's attention and then giving one's love to Krishna. If we want to become conscious of Krishna, first of all, to become aware of Krishna. We can't have a relationship with someone if we have no awareness of them. Krishna, fortunately, is not an ordinary personality. Therefore, we can become aware of him even without directly going to Goloka Vrindavan, or at least apparently not going to Goloka Vrindavan. Krishna can appear before us in different ways. In this age, it's recommended that we take advantage of Krishna's sound incarnation, especially in the form of the holy name or in the descriptions about Krishna's name, form, quality, pastime, entourage, because Krishna can appear before us in that form. Of course, in any age, Krishna can appear before us in that form also. It's not that in Kali Yuga only that Krishna and Krishna's name become non-different or the descriptions about Krishna become non-different, but in these other ages, Krishna is different from his name. But Krishna is eternally the same as his name, and he's eternally available. Prahlad Maharaj in Satyuga took advantage of that, and therefore he was always glorifying Krishna, was able to tolerate the tortures of his father, Hiranyakashipu. But it's simply a question of emphasis. Just like we can see in this age, people are not very regulated in their activities. Therefore, to get up the same time every day is rather difficult. Or even to regulate their lives in such a way is to base it around attending services regularly. I don't know what the state of the churches are in Belgium, but when I grew up in America, I grew up in a block, the closest big street that I live near to was called Church Avenue. So Church Avenue obviously was called Church Avenue because it was an avenue where there are many churches. But in the course of time, all the churches disappeared and they replaced them with banks. So now, if you go to Church Avenue, you don't find people going to the church to pray, even for bread. They go to the bank and pray for a loan, hoping to get some bread that way. Therefore, people have lost interest in going to church because they, first of all, they don't believe actually that it has any value to it. And number two, even if they did believe, they're too irregular in their habits to go regularly to anything, except for maybe their favorite television program. Because the only thing necessary to go there is to somehow or another try to change the channel on the remote. Even that may be difficult. Therefore, in this age, the chanting, which can be done anywhere at any time without any apparent rules and regulations, is what's recommended. But the aim of the chanting is ultimately to become aware of Krishna, and to become aware of Krishna means to become aware also that he's established in this universe in different places in his deity form. So it's not that after becoming self-realized in Krishna consciousness, then one neglects the deity because one sees that the deity and Krishna are not different. And not only that, but that same deity is in everyone's heart as the super soul, and therefore, living in this material world, in one sense, one doesn't see anything as different from Krishna. Sarabhutasam atmanam, sarabhutani chatmani, ikshate yoga yuktatma, saratra samadarshanaha. That the true yogi observes me in all beings, and also sees every being in me. Indeed, the self-realized soul sees me, the same Supreme Lord, everywhere. Yomam pashyati sarvatra, sarvam chamahi pashyati, tasyaham na pranashyami na chame na pranashyati. And for one who can see me everywhere and can see everything in me, then I am never lost to him, nor is he ever lost to me. So obviously, for most people who cannot perceive distinctly the value of the holy name, then they have to be, they're given an opportunity, if they take advantage of it, of directly perceiving Krishna in his deity form. But as I said, in this age, people are not generally very inclined to take advantage of that, and as Kali Yuga goes on, we can see it's less and less. Even in places, when I was in South India one year, this is maybe 7 or 8 years ago, in Ayurvedic hospital, well, clinic, it was just a little panchakarma, in, I believe it was Kerala. Then the closest Vishnu temple was a tiny little temple, I mean, really tiny. It wasn't even really a temple, it was like a monument or something, and a little tiny deity of Vishnu somewhere, and a little hole. And that they consider the closest Vishnu temple. And nearby, or somewhere nearby, was a Shiva temple that was much more popular because people would go to Shiva and pray for material things and he might even give it to them. Well, they had no faith that Vishnu had any power to give anyone anything. Therefore, even in a place where South India, famous for its worship of Vishnu, and somehow or another, that had become quite neglected. Shiva was hanging on there because he would be able to supply some material goods to people. But even that probably would be doubtful in some course of time, whether he can provide a new iPad every 6 months. People may become doubtful. In any case, the emphasis on deity worship is decreasing. You go to Vrindavan, because there are many pilgrims in Vrindavan, and we can see that because the standard of ISKCON's deity worship has gone up, therefore the standard of deity worship in many of the temples in Vrindavan has also greatly increased also, because it's competition, who has, where Krishna is actually situated. Whoever has the nicest temple, that's where Krishna is appearing. because we have to compete, there's a competition for the pilgrims to come there, not so much for their enlightenment, but for their donations. Therefore, because ISKCON has become established a very high standard of the beauty of their deities and the deity worship, therefore others have followed. But that doesn't mean that necessarily the pilgrims who go there are actually going there for self-enlightenment. If you watch around Govardhan Hill, many people are offering Govardhan, or some people, not so many, but some people are offering Govardhan Dandavat Parikrama. Some of them have 108 rocks, and they offer 108 Dandavats before they move on. So it's rather a slow process. But if you ask them what is their objective, it's not to go to Vaikuntha, it's not to go to Goloka Vrindavan, it's not self-realization. It's usually so they can pay for their daughter's wedding. Or some of them, they say, I want liberation or something, but they have no idea actually what is the purpose of circumambulating Govardhan Hill, because they really don't know who Govardhan Hill is. Therefore, in this age, although temples are established, but more important than temples is the propagation of the actual philosophy, why there is a temple in the first place. Without that philosophy, we can see that Prabhupada used to remark that especially in the Western world, deity worship in the form of the temples, because sometimes they don't have deities. You go to a temple and there is an altar with nothing on it. You just choose whatever you want to worship. You imagine what you're worshiping, the great unknown. In any case, people are neglecting temple worship because they don't see anything practical coming from it. There's no philosophy to explain the purpose of it. There's no sambandha to explain why the temple is there. There's no abhideya. There's nothing to do. You go there and you look at nothing. Or you go there and look at saintly persons being tortured to get enlivened. Or you go there, therefore people, because they have no understanding what the purpose is, and they don't know what to do once they're there, sometimes they offer prayers to God, rarely. Or they go there, nowadays in America at least, in order to attract people, they have because it's on Sunday, and people don't want to miss the Sunday football game. Therefore, in the church, they have a huge screen after the sermon, which is very brief, that everyone can stay and watch the football game. And then afterwards, after the football game, when people are sufficiently elevated in consciousness, sufficiently satisfied by their attendance at the church ceremony, then they have a barbecue outside. They eat the symbol of the personification of religion. And then afterwards they can go home and finish the Sunday with intoxication. So people don't know what the purpose is or what to do, nor do they know what the goal is. If you tell people there's a spiritual world, they think spiritual world means some place where everyone is sitting around with a harp or a horn, falling asleep, and God keeps on having to shake them to keep them awake. And once in a while, some deviant soul comes to the spiritual world, and God takes him and throws him into the blazing fire. And that's probably the only excitement going on the whole time anyone's there, just watching the souls getting burnt in the blazing fire. Otherwise, it's just the same old song. Glory be God. Glory be God. So, people are not very conscious of they're not aware at all what the goal is. If you tell them there's a spiritual world, And God there has four hands, and he's blue in one part of it. And his wife has four hands too. And everyone there has four hands. They think these people are, I thought they were strange, but now we know. And the highest position in the spiritual world, God is herding cows. And he's blue. And people think, oh, these people are, I thought they were taking intoxication, but there's no need for them taking intoxication. They're completely crazy. The highest personality, the supreme person, is a cowherd boy. Not only is he a cowherd boy, but he's a thief. And his favorite pastime is eating butter. He lives in a village. And their main product is butter and milk. That's the perfection of their economic development. Some people think these people are hallucinating, and they call that the goal of life. So people will not become very much attracted to that kind of philosophy. Of course, our major explanation is not about this, that being the highest goal of life, because people won't be able to understand it. But just understand how the material nature is working will gradually convince people that there is a necessity, there is an existence of God, at least there's a controller within the universe, and the necessities of life is to get out of the control of the illusory energy. Yesterday, one of my friends, his wife is a devotee, he's one of our writers for our magazine, so I was visiting him, and he gave me a DVD collection of a seminar of some of the prominent alternative people in the world. They were in Australia. They did a conference in 2009. So I just decided to look at the last day when they had a round table where they're answering questions. And the first question was, you know, I forget the exact question, but it was something about lust. What is the position of lust in spiritual life? You know, lust is usually considered very bad. What do you think? No one wanted to answer. And then finally, one of the Ayurvedic doctors, who I've read all his books practically, he answers, lust is not so bad. He said, lust is actually good. It just has to be regulated in the right way, tuned, fine-tuned. And then the other people who answered, some yoga teacher who I know, he said, it's very good. Anyhow, so then I decided that all this DVD collection is useless. It's completely useless. These people are completely in ignorance. They have no idea, even in this material world, how the material nature is working. If you ask someone, what is the purpose of a jail, of a prison? As someone said, the purpose of the jail is that we all should stay in it. It's a good that they have jails and we should stay in it. You think that this person, what kind of knowledge do they have? So generally speaking, even these so-called advanced transcendentalists, alternative therapists, spiritual revolutionaries, they're all in ignorance. They have no idea how the material nature works or what the purpose is to get out of it. That much they don't know. I remember they told me that some devotees were on this program, so I watched the program, it was recording, Who is God? And what they did, someone from England, they went to all the major principal religions in the world and all the leaders, and they asked them what their conception of God is. And practically speaking, none of them had any conception of God. These are all the top bishops, cardinals, priests, chaplains, whatever else, spiritualists. all they could say, oh, God is love, or sometimes we're all God, or nothing concrete. The only person is, well, they had a couple of devotees there, but they cut them off real quickly before they could say anything of any value that would disturb the program. The only person they allowed to say something that said something concrete that they gave him any time was Hugh Hefner. You know Hugh Hefner? The head of Playboy magazine. And his conclusion was that God is jazz. He had all these bunnies surrounding him, Playboy bunnies, and he came out with the statement, God is jazz. And everyone said, yeah, right on. He's got it. So in other words, practically the whole world is in ignorance. And even these so-called leaders, Andaya Tandero Kupi Giyamanas, Tipisha Tandro Rudami Bada, even these so-called leaders, they're also blind. They're going to the lower species of life. And our so-called followers who are trying to make progress, even in so-called spiritual life, are going to follow them. Therefore, the actual philosophy as given in Bhagavad Gita is actually what has to be propagated, and the conclusion of that should lead that at least people become a little bit more regulated in their lives. They want to do something a little bit positive in their lives in order to get out of the reactions to their previous activities. Krishna says, Yesham andhakatam papam jananam punyakarmanam te dvanva mohaniramuktva bhajante mam dhridavrataha. So, Prabhupada defines or summarizes the process of spiritual elevation as, he said that those who are sinful, those who are atheistic, those who are deceitful, and those who are foolish, they never are attracted to any kind of spiritual elevation. Those are the discretinas, the Naradamas, the Maya Pritiyanas, the Mudhas, and the Ashram Bhava Ashvita. Asuram bhavam ashvityas. So these people, they will never become attracted because they've been educated to defy God or to believe themselves to be God or to think that there is no God. But those who have practiced the regular principles of religion. So at least in the beginning, either by the power of just chanting the holy name and people becoming a little purified, or by the preaching of Bhagavad Gita, people should realize that at least they should regulate their sinful activities, that there is good and bad in the material world. Through the impersonalism which has been propagated, which has destroyed religiosity in the world, where most of the so-called religious preachers are all impersonalists, and they propagated that actually there is a God, but he has no qualities, he has no name, he has no form, he has nothing. So you should worship him, at least because you should feel sorry for him. No one else is going to do it. His mother has no interest in him. Because after all, how could you keep interest in a person with no name, form, quality, pastimes, or anything? He has no eyes, he has no peacock, he has nothing, he has no head, he has no peacock feather, because he has no head to put it on. He's a complete failure. But anyhow, he's God, so we should worship him just to make him feel better, because he's so incapacitated in his present position. So due to the propagation of Mayavadi philosophy, where God has become formless and without any qualities, either spiritual or material, therefore people have their only shelter is sense gratification. And for them, sense gratification, the only good in life is sense gratification. If something satisfies my senses, it's good. If it doesn't, it's bad. That's the only way of discriminating between what's good and bad. So if it's good for me to eat you, that's good. It may be bad for you, but it's good for me. So as far as I'm concerned, it's good. As one devotee told me in South Africa, some of the people there, rather simplistic view of reality, In their reality, if you're alive, you're good, and if you're dead, you're bad. So if you kill your enemy, that's good, because you're alive, and he's bad because he's dead. So that moral system is very simplistic, and whatever you do is all right as long as you stay alive and your enemies are dead. Only a little step above that is to say that everything is good. Whatever is makes you feel good, that's also good. Everything is good. So on that basis, even someone who propagates that there is bad in the world, and that, or that there's good and bad, and that you should do what's good and avoid what's bad, even that is rather controversial. People think, oh, these people are fanatics. They actually think they know what's good. In modern movies, nowadays, the hero, previously the hero used to be so-called good, whatever they can. Nowadays, the hero is something, sometimes the bad person. Or you can't really tell who's the hero and who he's fighting against. Because in the mode of ignorance, what they think is good is actually bad. What they think is bad is actually good. As I said, told before, when the devotees went out one time in this big festival they have called the Mardi Gras in New Orleans, every year they used to have, I guess they still have it, but it used to be a very big festival before this Hurricane Katrina destroyed the city, this pious city of New Orleans. So every year they'd have a festival, it was called Mardi Gras. And the idea of the festival is that everyone would be on the street for 1 week and they'd have a marathon to see how many principles they could break, regular principles they could break in 1 week. How many animals they could slaughter, if they could have illicit sex right on the street, if they can take how many intoxicants they could take in 1 week. So the whole city was out on the street performing as many sinful activities in a week as they could possibly do and keep their body and soul together at the same time. So the devotees, they decided to go out and help these poor conditioned souls so they went out to do Harinam, and as soon as they went out to do Harinam, as soon as they started to chant, the police came and arrested them all and charged them with disturbing the peace. So they thought that the devotees are demons. They're coming here to disturb our festival where we're in our very, religious way, eating meat, taking intoxication, gambling, and having illicit sex. These people have the nerve, they're so impious, they're actually impeding us. So we should arrest them and throw them in jail and do as ever necessary to discourage them in the future from committing such sinful activities. So people don't know, they're in ignorance, and therefore Krishna, he educates people, first of all, that we're not the body, that we're spiritual beings. Prabhupada one time said that will take 500 years for people to understand. We don't have to try to explain to them anything about the past sons of Krishna and the internal energy, because they don't believe that there's an internal energy. They don't even believe that they're part of the internal energy. So how are we going to explain about the pastimes and the internal energy of Krishna? But they don't even believe in Krishna. If you met the President of the United States, which is not very likely, we're going to do that. But even if you did, the first thing you wouldn't ask is about his pastimes with his family. First of all, you have to get to know him as a person before you start asking about what his relationship with his wife is. Similarly, we don't even believe, people don't even believe in Krishna, and yet they're more interested in Krishna's pastimes within his internal energy, because it appears to them something like the relationship between a young boy and a young girl, and therefore they don't really care whether who Krishna is. It's just some interesting activities. Some mythology, sometimes he jumps on snakes, beats them. But the main thing is he likes to dance with ladies, so therefore he's all right. It's kind of normal. And to support his activities, he steals butter. Maybe he sells it in the market or something. In any case, this is not appropriate. First of all, we have to explain to people the fact that they're not their body, that their bodies are changing, but they themselves within the body, they're not changing. Unfortunately, most people are not interested in this philosophy. They think it's irrelevant. They can't understand how it is any relevance to their existence, the fact that they are not changing and their body's changing. Therefore, it is said, what is that? Krishna Varnam Tvisa Krishna Sango Pangasya Parshadam Jagnai Sankirtana Prayara Yantihi Sumedasa. That in this age, Krishna is not coming in his blackish form, he's coming in his golden form, and he's vibrating the Hare Krishna mantra. And he's surrounded by his associates and his weapons in the form of his weapons, not in the sense of physical weapons, but his associates, his devotees, etc. And they're chanting the Hare Krishna mantra, Sankirtan. And those who have sufficient intelligence, they'll be able to appreciate it. Therefore, if people don't have sufficient intelligence to understand the difference between matter and spirit, then how are they going to appreciate the fact that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is coming and introducing the simplest process in order to realize ourselves as a spiritual being and the supreme spiritual person, and what to speak of the fact that he's appearing, that supreme person can appear in this world in his Archa-Vigraha form. If they can't understand that there is a spirit, then their conception of God will be limited to some material conception. And therefore, even they go to the temple and they see the deity, they'll think it's simply some representation of some supreme idea. Most people, when they go to the temple, they think when they see the deity, they wonder why these people spend so much time, playing with dolls. Obviously, these people, they had some unusual childhood, not a very fulfilling childhood. Their parents cannot supply them with the requisite toys to satisfy them. Therefore, feeling that vacuum within their heart, they join the Hare Krishna movement where they could, at least some of them, could worship, play with dolls during the day. Because their conception is that everything is material, therefore if they have some dolls on the altar, obviously they must be material also, because there is no such thing as spirit. And with such a conception, why would you go to a temple and worship a doll? Or even put some money in the box? Maybe those who are brought up with the culture of doing that, they may do that, but generally people have no real conception. They do it out of superstition or out of ritual or because their grandmother told them to do it. But that can't last very long. In Vrindavan, when I first went to Vrindavan, as you can listen in the recordings of Prabhupada in his Vrindavan series, I was just listening to one quarter, I don't know how many times I've ever listened to it. It's part of the Nectar Devotion series. And Prabhupada was trying to plead with the residents of Vrindavan to respect the devotees who have come there and not try to drive them away, because they consider the devotees there more or less in their own way, that as persons who have come there and they're imposing themselves on the holy dhamma. But because they came from the Western world, obviously they could not be serious about their worship in Vrindavan. So at first, many residents of Vrindavan did not appreciate the presence of the foreigners in Vrindavan trying to perform devotional activities there. But in the course of time, when they saw the seriousness of the devotees, then they actually began to appreciate them. But nowadays, even some 5 years ago or 6 years ago, one of the devotees, her daughter, was marrying one of the famous jewelers there, Sriji Jewelers, his son, and they were having a wedding in Mathura in a big fancy hotel. They invited everyone. I was teaching at the VIHE there. They invited me and my roommate Bhakti Chaitanya Maharaj, but we were not very much interested in going to the wedding. In any case, the devotees came back and they were quite surprised, because all the devotees, they went in dhotis and saris and tilak, and all the residents of Vrindavan, they all went in tuxedos and wedding dresses, and they were all playing rock. They were playing rock music. There wasn't any bhajans, and they were serving alcohol. So that was the wedding. So now the devotees, they're still dressed for the most part. Of course, sometimes even our ISKCON members are sometimes rather reluctant to put on devotional clothing. But for the most part in Vrindavan, they walk around in devotional clothes. And the residents, they think it's rather strange. In other words, people have lost the understanding, not only we're not this body, but there is a God, and he's not only a God, but he can be in everyone's heart. In the second canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam, the Lord in the heart, there's an elaborate description of how we can understand Krishna's presence there by use of intelligence. In other words, Prabhupada describes how we're not the body, how we can see that we're aware of the body, but any particular part of the body is not aware of any other part of the body. The arm is not aware, but we're aware of the arm. So the arm can't be said to be the person. It's the person who's aware of the arm. He gives a detailed explanation of that, and then he explains how we arrive at these conclusions that there's a seer, and what he sees is different from himself by the use of intelligence. And that the spiritual quality of the seer can be understood by his dissatisfaction with his limited state of material condition experience. That no one is happy ultimately in material existence because it's limited, and we don't want to be limited. Therefore, in modern movies and in every culture, that the heroes are generally extraordinary personalities with less limitations than we have. Superman is an idol because he has less limitations than we have. And even if someone is a hero in a movie who has limitations, they're the hero because they're able to transcend or go beyond the boundaries of their limitations. So everyone wants to go beyond the boundaries of their limitations. That's why they built airplanes. That's why they have cars. That's why they have subways. That's why they're trying to do so many things, because they're trying to go beyond their limited existence. But if you have a rope tied around your nose, you may have a 50-foot rope or a 100-foot rope, but you're still limited by the rope. So everyone is dissatisfied by their limited state or their material condition experience. It says that even Brahma is dissatisfied. Why? Because Brahma, he knows he's going to die, and that's quite a limitation. He only lives for 311 trillion, 40 billion years, and the time is ticking away. Brahma right now is 50 years old, so he realizes my end is nearing. And of course that sounds extraordinary to us, but when you're having a good time, time goes quickly, more quickly. When Revati Devi and her father, her father was Renuka. It's a different name than given in the Krishna book. Anyhow, they went to Brahmaloka to find a good husband. And while they were there, the Gandharvas were having a concert. And so Brahma asked them to wait until the concert was over before he would entertain their particular request. Therefore, after some time, the concert came to an end and Brahma asked, what was your desire? Kahuti. Kahuti, I forget his name. So he said, I want my daughter to have a suitable husband. He said that, unfortunately, you've been here for a very short time of my existence, which has been just a few minutes, but in your existence, it's been many millenniums. Therefore, your whole dynasty has come to an end. All your descendants have come to an end. Of their descendants have come to an end. Anyone who's ever heard of you has come to an end. In other words, everything you have is finished. It's been millenniums have passed. But if you go immediately, then you can give your daughter to Balaram, who is presently incarnated, but don't ask any questions. Just go right now. Gone. When you're having a good time, time goes quickly. And therefore, Brahma is only 50 years old already. He's middle-aged, and he has half his existence left. And he's afraid, because he has his limitations. His life is limited. So how to transcend these limitations, Prabhupada says, we feel dissatisfaction because we can't transcend them when we're in our limited state of material condition experience. But then he says, trust no future, however pleasant. Idle talk about the future, combination of matter into spirit, is so much idle talk. We've never seen matter being converted into spirit. Spirit is there, and then he says, we arrive at that conclusion by use of our intelligence. Then he says that intelligence is being supplied to us just like the father is supplying instruction to his son or the teacher is supplying instructions to his student. Intelligence is not coming out of nothing, it's coming out of somewhere. As the ants are receiving intelligence to find sugar, as we're receiving intelligence to find the Mahasweet also, so that intelligence is all pervading. It's in every living entity, being supplied differently according to the different bodies that the living entities have. So that in all-pervading intelligence, which sometimes gives us intelligence, sometimes gives us awareness, sometimes gives us forgetfulness, that's the super soul in everyone's heart. Therefore, he can be perceived if we utilize our intelligence in the right way. It is not that Krishna is unknown. He's known when people utilize their intelligence properly. Whether looking at the material world, how nicely it's been organized, how the laws of karma work, how reincarnation works, how God is in our hearts supplying us with remembrance, knowledge, and forgetfulness, or how he's the fire of digestion, and by his power, the food that we eat is digested, assimilated, and the unnecessary parts are eliminated. And from that assimilated food comes this amazing bodily machine that we happen to be situated within presently. So Krishna is perceived, at least in the beginning, by our awareness. And if we extend that by explanation and by experience, then people can come to become aware of the fact that God, as he can be in everyone's heart and supply everyone with intelligence, and how we're spiritual, how we can control the universe, then his situation, his appearing as a deity within the temple is not unreasonable. But without such explanations, people are simply left to the ignorance which has been they've been trained up with, that we are the body and the purpose of life is just to eat and sleep and maybe do a few other things too. But beyond that, they have no conception because they've been trained up in ignorance. Ignorance means they can't even understand the difference between an ever-changing body and the eternal soul within. So people can be, if that explanation is given, then there is some possibility of them making further progress. Prabhupada would always explain that. And when people couldn't understand that, then either he'd ask his disciples to bring in some prasadam for them. What's that? Yes. Or he'd explain about Vanashram Dharma, how the aim of life should be to produce people in the mode of goodness. At least that much should be achieved. So we should keep our explanations in such a way as it's relevant to most people that we're preaching to, and that generally means a rather simplified, well not simplified, but basic explanation of our philosophy, ultimately to explain to them how they're not their body, and hopefully they can understand how there's a super soul in their heart, and those who are a little bit more advanced may be able to understand how the deity in the temple is actually Krishna, not just a symbolic representation of something that we're supposed to be worshiping. Then the power of the holy name, etc. And sometimes, due to the power of the holy name, people can't understand anything else. If they just hear the holy name, they may become purified enough to regulate their sinful activities, and then beyond that, perform devotional activities, so that gradually their intelligence may become increased, so they can tolerate the urges of the senses and come to the human form of life. So I'll stop there. Any questions? Yes. Well, if we have anarthas, it doesn't matter where we are, we'll see them in others. But that doesn't mean that any time you go out and you see people are, you know, uninterested, that automatically means that I'm uninterested also. Just that's the anarthas. We're seeing the anarthas, but that doesn't mean that it's necessarily the anarthas within our heart. I mean, there's such a thing as, of course, it is not that these anarthas may not exist within our heart also. If we go out in the street and we're not, or anywhere in the temple, we come to Mangal Arati and we're just wondering why I came here. I can't remember how I wound up in Mangal Arati. I wish I wasn't here. If I am here, it's only to prove to everyone that actually I'm powerful enough to come here. That I'm a good person because I'm here. But I'm not very much interested, I'm not very much aware of what's really going on. While the Mangal Arati is going on, our mind is somewhere else. And we're not really even aware when the Guru Vastika prayers are finished, when they started, when they ended, when we got up to, whether they sang the Tulsi Puja or not, or we can't remember whether or not they sang the prayers of Lord Narsingadev, or who sang, or what the tune was. If you ask the devotees what color the deities wearing, what color dress, and then they say, well, which deities? So sometimes there may be a lack of interest. Matter of fact, because we're conditioned souls, there will be. So obviously when we see the people out there, they're either in here, they have somewhat of a lack of interest, or they have somewhat of a distraction or whatever else is impeding their devotional activities in the street. Obviously, it's very quickly we can recognize it and see it within ourselves. But it's just we have to be conscious, just as we have to be conscious here, we have to be conscious everywhere. But not just, there goes another person, he has no interest, he's going to hell, there goes another person, he's going to hell. And I have no interest either in saving him, therefore I'm going to hell with him. No, that's, all right, we can see that, but at the same time we have to understand that the potential is there. If we become interested ourselves in the subject matter of delivering the conditioned souls, and if we rely upon Krishna in order to become an instrument to do that, we have the proper understanding that neither we're going to be able to deliver anyone, including ourselves, without becoming an instrument for Krishna and his representatives. And that's why we're there. And therefore we present things to people, and when they become enlivened by it, that enlivens us. It's not that we're simply out there to enliven others, because we're fully interested, we're fully paying attention to what's going on. We have all good qualities, but we're coming out there to save all these fallen, rotten souls out there. No, actually, when we become an instrument, then we're conveying Krishna's potency. And when we see people are interested, when they become enlivened by that potency, then we also become more interested by watching their interest. So as we can see their disinterest, we also become enlivened by their interest. But that interest is not being generated by us, it's being generated by the previous acharyas and Krishna supplying the transcendental enlivenment by which people become interested. And that makes us interested too. Okay, well, yes. What's that? For visitors? Well, Prabhupada gives the argument. Well, first of all, people have to believe that there is a God. If they don't believe there's a God, for them, it wouldn't matter whether the deity's God or anyone else's God. They don't believe that there is God. So that's another argument. But if they do believe in God, then the usual reasoning given is that just like the post office could have so many different boxes on the street, and these boxes, because they're authorized by the post office, therefore if you put your letter in that authorized box, it'll go to the destination. Similarly, God, he has his authorized representative in the form of the deity, he's authorized, and therefore whatever you can direct to God or would direct to God can also be directed to his authorized agent, the deity in the temple, and it's all authorized by scripture. We didn't make it up. It's been authorized by the Vedic scripture. And you can tell whether or not it works or not, but then you have to go through a process of deity worship by which the deity will reciprocate with you. If I told you there's a beautiful girl and you can have a fantastic relationship with her, it's all theoretical. You have to meet the girl and you have to establish a relationship with her, and you can see whether or not the relationship works or not. So similarly, we can explain theoretically how there is a God, how the deity is God in the temple, is authorized to accept our worship, who is accepting our worship. But then one has to perform the necessary the activities of deity worship in order to reciprocate with the deity, so that the deity actually reveals himself as the Supreme Person. Thank you. very much. Krantara Srimad Bhagavata Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita Ki Jai. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Or Premanande. Haribol.